Yeah, I think it's a really important perspective, especially in education, because, like, I feel like lots of, like, students, when they just, like, the process of their growing up, they just, like, face those, like, knowledge that, like, women are always, like, facing, like, those punishments or, like, just unequal, like, treatments. Like, people just couldn't explain it. But as long as this perspective works in this education to the young people, they can, maybe they can contribute to change, like, the female positions in the future. So, like, people can, like, actually understand, like, why people, like, why women are, like, portrayed as that way, like, mm-hmm. as before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is also the meaning of humanities, actually. So, I think recently so many people, they don't understand the value of humanities, especially, you know, historical researches. Why we would, you know, look at people and things
in the past,
and writings in the past, you know, they won't contribute to industry, right? To, you know, they won't help us to earn more money. So, you know, only through, you know, those historical lessons, we can be a better self and we can establish a better world, which is more inclusive and mm-hmm. which can provide mm-hmm. you know, better gender equality, mm-hmm. right? So that's why I would call for all students to take courses in humanities. It's helpful.
it's really helpful.
If I could, like, I know we have to move on, but, like, I'm beginning to, as the more time I spend at Lafayette and have conversations like this, I'm beginning to understand, like, more. Like, before, I was very much in, like, STEM. Like, I need to become a doctor. I need to learn how to code. I need to learn how to, all these things. But recently, I've been learning about how, like, even with these new technologies, even with these new automations, even with these faster ways of moving our society really fast, it brings along our human flaws with it. Like, social media is supposed to connect people, right? But it actually polarizes people because it brings along our, like, we're not understanding each other. And it's just whatever human flaws we have, it just amplifies it.
Yes, that's great. Yeah, very great comments. Yeah, I always told my students that, you know, STEM disciplines like computer science or mathematics, physics, chemistry, you know, of course they help you to land a better job, mm-hmm. to make more money.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we are not just money earning machines.
Yeah,
we're not just machines. Coding machines,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
We need communications mm-hmm. with each other.
Mm-hmm.
We need, you know, establish, you know, emotional, intellectual, mm-hmm. and mental connections with others. So we need to understand each other's.
Yeah.
So that, and also how we can identify ourselves or how we can define ourselves,
mm-hmm.
who you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't think you are machines, then you need to think about humanism, what humanism is, what is personhood, what is your selfhood.
Mm-hmm.
So that is where, you know, our courses in mm-hmm. humanities enter the picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is where, you know, it is helpful,
mm-hmm.
because it they will help you to establish a more complete and a balanced personhood. As a better citizen,
mm-hmm.
right, in the world, mm-hmm. not just a machine who mm-hmm. only knows how to earn money and mm-hmm. Maybe code, right?
I think it's really important it need to, like, break the, like, orthodox, like, cognition for a human. So it's a really good perspective. I want to ask, like, so what was the culture shock when you first, like, came to study or work in United States? Like, what is the hardest thing that you need to adapt, like, once you came here?
I think, from my personal experience, I think maybe the biggest cultural shock is that I have a very conservative Chinese stomach.
Mm.
So yeah, so the eating habits, I think, was a very big issue that I have at that time. So at that time, I didn't like hot dogs, mm-hmm. pizzas. Mm-hmm. I didn't like ketchup. Cinnamon. Yeah.
So no.
I hate cinnamon, actually.
Even till this day?
Yes. And what? Pickles, you know, pickles. I it's like
a, okay, pickles I get. Yeah. Pickles is like whatever.
Once a lifetime experience, I won't taste a pickle again. So yeah, so I think it took a long time for me to get used to cooking for myself and my family. You know, come to terms with different and sometimes shocking tastes. And also, you know, to maybe to debate between creamy and crunchy peanut butter and more than 100 different types of cheese in the supermarket.
Yeah,
so a lot of, this kind of things. Yeah, I think it's very interesting that it is always your body that first, you know, experiences.
The culture shock.
Yeah, the culture shock.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but it is also your body who can, you know, really help with, you know, getting used or, you know, blending in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So gradually you can see when your body, you know, settles. Your then mind and settles. Heart will settle.
Wow! I never even thought of it like that. Oh my God.
So, and another thing about eating is that there is no available, like, breakfast stalls on the street. I think American people, usually, they don't have very good breakfast and lunch.
I think they usually have, like, a cup of coffee for the breakfast.
Yes.
Bagel or something.
But Chinese people, they put huge emphasis on breakfast.
Yeah, we really, like... the beginning of the day.
Yeah, and for lunch, you know, they only usually, I think, you know, salads is the staple food for lunches. So at that time, I didn't like, you know, eating raw vegetables. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was, you know, so used to eating cooked
vegetables.
Yeah, vegetables and dishes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a huge change or adjustment I need to make. And also because labor is so expensive here, so usually you don't find anyone to help repair your shoes, your bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
So it is even more expensive than just buying a new one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but back into China, you know, basically people, they would first consider repairing
their
a malfunctioned
before
thing.
Before they just buy a new
one. Rather than buying a new one. So this is a brand new thing that, I need to get used to.
Yeah, I never thought of it as because, like, people didn't think to repair. I just thought that it was, like, just ingrained consumerism. Like, we can just buy another one or buy this. But I never thought, like, maybe if you had people, like, used to the idea of repairing your objects, people would be more, like, resourceful and, like, not, like, just buy new things.
And it's like more environmentally friendly,
conscious.
Right?
Yeah.
So, it's just because repairing, I think, back in China is more affordable than purchasing a new one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in the U.S. it's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in the reverse, right? Yeah, buying a new one is more affordable than paying for the labor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, repairing things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think this is another different things.
Yeah, I feel like it's the same because I face really lots of like challenges on the food here because I miss the like food back home really much like every day. So, but it's really expensive for Chinese food here too.
Mm.
So. Yeah.
I'm kind of like jealous about how like the breakfast you guys were describing like being so much more important. They say breakfast is like the most important part of the day, like as like a little slogan in the US,
mm-hmm.
but it's just like cereals and like milk. And I never had like a hearty breakfast. And sometimes like for a long time in high school, I just skipped breakfast and just like, cause it wasn't really worth like, I'm going to pour some milk into cereal and like, I mean, go about my day, but I'd be interested to like, going to China and maybe like seeing what it's like. What is true breakfast like? What is real breakfast like? Yeah.
Yeah. If you like walk out of your home like at like 5 a.m. or 6 a.m., you can find lots of like breakfast like places for you to eat and enjoy the breakfast. So yeah, but here is like barely you can see any like place for you to have like enjoy the breakfast.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Chinese parents know their children like you skipped breakfast, they're gonna be panic stricken.
Really?
They're like, oh, you're committing a crime. Really? You cannot do that. Yeah. Eat your breakfast.
Wow. That's a wow.
My mom always asking me, like, yeah, did you eat like every breakfast? Like she always asks me this. And I said, I would just like, always escape, like, because I have nothing to eat and always I don't have any time. So it's kind of like a really difference. It's a really big difference.
Yeah. So some scholars, they might say, you know, this is actually the cultural difference, like reflecting the philosophical distinctions. Defining Western culture and the Eastern culture. Mm-hmm. Eastern culture actually always ask us to slow down.
Hmm.
You know, because in our modern, especially Westernized societies,
it's like
we always say, "Oh, we are so busy, we don't have time to eat breakfast," right? So, but maybe in the especially ancient Eastern wisdom, you cannot conquer the world until you sit down and slow down.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't even have time to eat breakfast, you know, you cannot do anything well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you need to slow down and treat yourself well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, be healthy, and then you can go conquer the world.
Mm-hmm.
Not just like, oh, I'm so busy conquering the world, I don't have time to eat.
For myself, yeah.
Yeah, so because eating is a very important thing to define us as human beings, you know, to define humanhood.
Mm-hmm.
Because I still remember one scholar, they made this observation. They were like, you know, cooking is the only skill that human being, you know, belongs to human being. All the other animals, they don't know how to cook. Sure. They don't have this ability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so cooking actually defines us as human.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like some people could make arguments like other animals also don't know how to use their thumbs or like, I don't know, think of like objects and create things. But I also see cooking as being in line in the same cloud of things that like define human beings. Yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, you need to treat your body well. And then you develop other skills like, you know, using your thumb to do coding or video games, right?
Yeah. As an international student or one with an international background, how did you find a sense of community on campus when you came, and what did it look like?
I think it would not be surprising for all international students to feel lonely sometimes, right?
Yeah.
When they traveled abroad to pursue a degree. So at the very beginning, I think at that time, you know, first of all, I think our instinct is to find folks who share our roots, you know, right? From the same cultural background, from the same country or even the same region, right? Who speak the same language with you. So this is the easiest way to give yourself a community, to find yourself a community, right? But gradually I realized that, you know, communities actually should not be there drawing boundaries, you know, dividing you and other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to reach out to, you know, other people who share the same curiosity and the passion with me, not just, you know, who speak the same language or, you know, the same route, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for example, you can go find folks, you know, who are also into knitting or reading horror you know, or detective novels, or watching horror movies, right? You know, you can find folks who also like ice creams, right? Yeah, so, yeah, who share, you know, the same passion with you in any number of, you know, things and habits. So I think that is a good way for you to expand your community. Yeah, to you know, spread your tentacles to different directions. Yeah, to find folks that, you know, who at least share one thing, same thing or interest with you. So in that, I think in that sense, you know, you will see that, you know, all the different communities, actually there are no boundaries, or the boundaries are porous. Yeah, you can make those communities as bridges to you. Yeah, to connect to different peoples. Yeah, so and also you can also find people share the same identity labels with you. Like, you know, for example, like me, I you know, I would also talk to or reach out to people who are also scholars of color. And who are female scholars, who are mothers, right? So, yeah, or, you know, who also, you know, who are meat lovers. Yeah, so we even had a meat lover union, you know, in my PhD program. Yeah, so like, you know, maybe every week we just get together and eat meat together. Yeah, so I think, yeah, a lot of things that you can do to find friends.
What would you be if you weren't a professor, like in another universe, another life?
Oh, that's a really good question. Yeah, I have always been thinking or dreaming, you know, an alternative me. Yeah, and what this alternative me would look like. So I think if I were not a professor, I would still be a thinker, a reader, a writer, and an explorer, because I think reading and writing is really my things. I really like reading books and writing. So I you know, a Chinese saying goes like, you know, reading 10,000 books is not as well as walking 10,000 miles, but I think the two, actually, they are the same. They are equally important and enlightening, right? Because reading books actually help you to transcend the temporal boundaries. You can establish this intellectual, mental, and even spiritual connections with all the great minds throughout the long history of human beings, right? While, you know, traveling 10,000 miles, you know, go looking at the bigger world itself, you know, is to help you transcend the spatial boundaries. You immerse your own body first into a new culture, a different environment. Yeah, so I think that's another equally enlightening process or journey. So both reading and maybe traveling are important. And then, you know, you might want to pass down this kind of wonderful legacy. You know, after you talked, communicated, or connected with all the great minds previously and in different places of the world, you might want to write something and pass it down to, you know, the future generations and audience. So I think this is how, you know, human beings, you know, achieve not only longevity, you know, our culture and civilization achieves not only longevity, but also immortality. Yeah, so I would imagine myself still as a thinker, reader, writer, and explorer.
Yeah. Wow.
That's really educational.
Yeah, I want to be a thinker, a speaker, a writer, and explorer now. Like, oh, okay. So we've come to the end of our podcast. So thank you so much for joining us, Professor Ma. And one last question. If you could give one piece of advice to international students, what would it be?
Yeah, one piece is... too little. Yeah, I have so many advices. But basically, my advice would be, so first of all, embracing your awkwardness as your superpower. Just, you know, don't be afraid of being yourself. Don't be afraid of speaking, you know, maybe broken or bumpy English with accent. You know, be proud of your own culture. Be proud of your gender. Be proud of, you know, whatever special and different that you have. You know, that define who you are. And I would also encourage international students to talk to people, you know, never stop communicating with people, you know, never stop exploring available resources. So for example, it's not just like those big deals like a fellowship or financial aid or what kind of awards I can receive, right? So maybe you can just go to a brown bag informal lecture or play the stress resistance board games in the library, or just go to professor's office hours. You know, you will always, you know, find people who would like to help, support, and advise. So, yeah, so it's not like you are taking advantages. You are really participating. Yeah, in, you know, the communities. So I think, yeah, I always encourage international students to, you know, just be brief, yeah, and talk to people. Always talk to people. So, yeah, I think it's also relevant to my answer to your last question. So I also hope all the international students never stop thinking, never stop reading, never stop learning, never stop participating. So, yeah, that is my advice. Oh, and also call your parents more.
That's the part that I felt most like, because like once, like every time I called my parents, I feel really like better of like my current problems that I face myself, because like they just, like my parents, they are just really helpful. Like even I just call them for just like chatting. So that's kind of like an emotional attachment for all, like I think for all those international students, like whatever, like it's friends or family or parents, just like find the emotional attachment, and that's really helpful.
Yeah, it's such a confusing idea, you know. Family, yeah, is always at the center, always the crucial source of power, right? Strength, yeah. Love, yeah, support, right?
Yeah, I think it's really like deep in the consciousness in Chinese people, like even we don't say we are Confucians, like, so yeah, that's really, mm-hmm, that's a really meaningful answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One last thing. Before you go, I think you mentioned before we started the podcast that you were writing a book.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's my monograph.
Oh, could you tell us more about it?
Yeah, actually, at the beginning of our session, I shared some of my research.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they are the substantial component of my first monograph. I hope this is my first, and there will be a second in the future. Yeah. So the title, my monograph is titled Boudoir, Buddha, and Body, Reimagining Social and Religious Spaces for Women in Late Imperial China. So, yeah, so in this book, you will see how, you know, how resourceful, smart, and powerful, you know, Chinese women can be, you know, in a highly gender-biased, you know, Confucian society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah, of course, through their religiosity.
Yeah,
so, and hopefully, yeah, my book will be coming out next year.
Yeah, okay. I'm really looking forward
to it too. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to give us a really educational and really helpful and fascinating.
Insightful, yeah, and just, yeah. I really want to take a class with you now.
Thank you yeah. for very kind words.
Yeah, we are really happy to have you today.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we are really welcome to, like, for you to join us the new episode for another podcast.
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah
it's
thank you so
my
much.
Pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, that's all for this episode. Join us next time for a new episode of Global Expressions Podcast.